It's time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It's Monday, and we're back with another podcast. And I'm so excited about doing these. I love doing these with you all. I'll be doing these when I'm an old man. Okay, so I'm 68. Someone suggests that's already old. Well, we're going to be keep doing this until we're really old. How about that? So love doing it. Love having you here. And it's so much fun to hear from our listeners. Hard to believe that we're already making it through this year. It's happening so quickly. January is almost over. This could be one of the more interesting years we've had in mortgage banking. Of course, I guess you could say that at the beginning of every year, especially when you look backwards. Anyway, so much fun. What's going on here? Heads down in your processes, improving your business, investing wisely, and all that kind of good stuff in an ever-changing industry. And we're glad to be here to help you find ways to be successful in this, what I think could be an interesting year, somewhat challenging, but it's going to be fascinating. Now, what we have in our Hot Topic segment is Les Parker and I caught up, and we recorded his predictions of where the market's going to be going. There's going to be two versions of it. There's the long version, and then we have the short version, about a 40-minute version. Les talking about the economics, are you kidding? He can't do it in any kind of time frame. That's what I would consider short. So really excited to have him here with us. Anyway, we've been doing this for nearly 10 years, and one of the things that when you do something and you do it with a passion and you love doing it, other people pick up on it. And what's so exciting is to see there is a whole new podcast industry growing up within the mortgage industry. Now, a lot of that is going on in the area of loan originations. But we've been privileged to get to know many of the other podcasters. One of the common denominators is they all come back and say, look, and, you know, you were such an inspiration, or you helped us get started, or you're doing it the longest, 10 years. Most of them are just really getting into it. But there's some really good content coming out, and there's a new thing called the Industry Syndicate. And we got to be invited in to be one of the founders of the founding members or founding podcasts in there. However, what that really means, folks, is, Lickin, you're old. You've been around for a long time. You and your guests have been around doing a great job. We're going to honor you. But I encourage you to check out some of the podcasts that are there. So check out Industry Syndicate. And we'll have that on our website if it's not already there. By the way, Paul redid the website. Our program director redid the website over the weekend. Go check it out. We're constantly working on improving our game. I want to talk about the business expanding and what's going on out there in the market and some ideas. Now, we had the privilege, or we have many listeners out there. Many of you guys own your own companies. But we recently caught up with Richard Wydell, who's CEO of Princeton Mortgage and Princeton Wholesale. When I listened to him, I said, Rich, do you mind if we just turn on the microphone or turn on the recorder and record some of your comments? I was really impressed with some of the things he had to say. So here's a clip from Rich that I want to share with you. This is an encouragement to all of y'all. That's Texas Talk, all y'all, to come and give me a call. Who knows? You may end up on the podcast. So let's take a listen to a brief segment I recorded with Rich Wydell. We're honored to have you as a listener. And when we were talking the other day, you talked about a program that you launched that got some people nervous, but it was such an outstanding idea. And I want you to share that with our listeners.
Yeah, sure, David. I think you're talking about the Princeton Promise. And so
the Princeton Promise. I like that.
Yeah. And so I'll walk through how it developed and what it came to. So, you know, obviously it's frustrating for all of us in a commodity business. You know, we're all trying to eke out another 2%, and a lot of what we do is marketing. And we said, well, what really matters? And we studied it, and what we think really matters to the customer is a decrease in effort. How easily can they get done what they want to do? And that's great. And so we created the Effortless Mortgage, and we put a lot of teeth behind that. But our customer service scores were kind of middle of the pack. We were doing a good job, but we weren't knocking it out of the park. And so we said, well, we really need to make our customer powerful. And one of the other problems we were having is that, you know, the machine always kind of hides problems from from the CEO and ops leaders and things like that. And you don't have true accountability in the system. And so I stumbled onto something called catalytic mechanisms, which came out of Harvard Business School and Jim Collins. And one of the examples he said, you know, you have to have a brand promise and you have to make it really hurt if you don't live up to that brand promise. So we said, great, well, we've got a brand promise. It's the effortless mortgage. How do we make it hurt? And the example they give in the book was Short Pay. I think it was called Rock Quarries. And they were having customer service problems. You know, their backhoe drivers and dump truck drivers were hitting each other and people yelling at each other. And so what they launched was what's called a Short Pay. And so what they did is any of their customers, when they got their receipt, if they didn't feel like they, you know, were treated well, they could, instead of paying the bill, they could write down how much they wanted to pay and just pay it, no questions. I said, huh, that's really, really scary. And usually, when things scare me, I'm like, this is probably a good idea or a disaster. But we believe in the build, measure, learn model, where we want to be experimenting. We don't really care if we've got good ideas. We want to try a lot of different things and see what takes. So we said, well, let's go really big or go home and let's learn. And so we said, let's launch this Princeton promise that says, if our customer is unhappy, they can click a button and get $1,000. So I asked my team to work on it, and they came back with, you know, I said, what are the rules on it? Everybody was kind of against it. You know, oh, everybody will take advantage of us. You don't understand, Rich, the customer, blah, blah, blah. I said, I don't know. Like, do you guys leave tips? Yeah, well, you don't have to leave a tip. I said, if the service is bad, do you still leave a tip? They said, yeah. I said, I think people are fundamentally good. I don't think we're going to get taken advantage of, and let's try it. If it blows up in our face, it's not going to put us out of business. So they came back with a list of, you know, the 15 rules where it applied. And I said, forget this. Let's start with no rules. If we've missed something and we get taken advantage of, then we can debate whether or not we want to add more rules to it. So we went ahead and launched it in January of last year after kind of long debate. And it was not popular. You know, there's those moments as a leader where you try to build consensus and get everybody on the same page. I was alone on this one. I had a few people really with me, but a lot of people really were scared of it because this is true accountability. The customer, if we let them down, they can very publicly hurt us. And so actually, I mean, the point of when we launched it, and I don't say this with any pride, but kind of just some context of how fearful we were, somebody got up in the middle of the meeting, packed up her stuff, and left. She said, you guys, Rich has lost his mind. He's out of control. I'm out of here. Well,
wow.
Yeah.
Literally quit. Quit the job.
Quit. Didn't come back. Yep, didn't come back. And we were in the midst of a big overhaul. I was new to the company, and I probably go a little too fast with things. But we really set an audacious goal to go to 50,000 loans by 2028. In order to do that, you have to do things differently.
Right.
So we said if we were going to run it for a quarter, and if less than 10% of our customers claimed it, if fewer than 10% of our customers claimed it, we would call it a success. And so every single automated email that went to a customer had at the bottom of it a button they could click to get $1,000. It says, unhappy, don't believe this has been effortless, click here and we'll give you $1,000. And wouldn't you know, we finished out all of 2018, less than 1.5% of our customers claimed.
Wow. What did you budget for again? What was it, the number 10%. That you're thinking? 10%.
We thought,
and you end up with only just slightly over 1%.
Yes. And so what happened?
Amazing.
We used it as I always say. There's no teacher like pain. And so in the beginning we had
so
quite
true.
A few. In the beginning we did have quite a few, and we used each one as an opportunity. We stole this from the SEALs, where after they get done a combat, they immediately come back and do what's called an after-action review, an AAR. So every time we had a Princeton promise, we dove in, we looked at what happened, we brought all the problems to the surface, and it caused this huge change mechanism in our people, in our processes, and in our technologies. And we finished off the year. I said, you know, we started the middle of the pack. By the end of the year, there are 1,000 mortgage companies that report their net promoter scores, which is a customer satisfaction score.
Right, right.
On our retail side, we're 7 out of 1,000 mortgage companies, and on our wholesale side, we're number one in the wholesale space for customer satisfaction.
Wow, wow. So that is outstanding. For a little bit, so you're a wholesaler. You also have a retail arm of your company?
Yep, wholesale and retail.
Outstanding. I tell you, folks, you want this is the kind of stuff I love hearing from listeners on. It's so exciting when we have listeners that are doing innovative things. And if you have an idea that's something that you're wanting to get on there, get a hold of me. I'm really enjoying Richard. We're going to book him for a whole long segment so we can hear all the other innovative things you're doing. And I understand you're growing. You're a well-established company, and you're growing. And people that are looking to sell or making moves, you're open for bringing them on. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, we're a 35-year-old company. We were regional. We're well-capitalized, and our leadership team kind of retired. I came in, built a new leadership team. We're about 2 years into that transition now. We're licensed in most states, and we are kind of my whole driving force is to foster an environment where motivated people can thrive, and we are attracting super talented people, and whether that's through acquisitions or mergers or people joining the team or partnering or different vendors, we just want to surround ourselves with the best and smartest people that we can.
That's outstanding. Rich, you can tell your Goldman Sachs days are coming forward into the mortgage. I'm excited. You're going to be one of the companies we're going to be paying a lot of attention to. You're an up-and-comer, and even though you've been around for 35 years, your company is being reinvented. 2 years into the journey, we are going to have you back for a full segment to hear all that's going on. Thanks so much, Rich. I really appreciate you connecting with me, and I am really excited about our newfound friendship.
Hey, Dave, the pleasure is mine. I'm always happy to share. I'm learning so much from people like yourself and the podcast that you put out, and I really enjoy
thank
the time,
you.
So thank you.
So the big question is, how can people get a hold of you? What do you prefer, calling, email? What do you prefer?
Yeah, I'm easy to find. LinkedIn, our website, email, whatever anybody wants. You know, in the digital age, it's easy. But I'm rwydell at princeandmortgage.com that way, or LinkedIn, Rich Wydell.
We'll put it in the show notes, folks, so you can click on the hyperlink on our website to get a hold of Rich. Encourage you to get to know him. This has been fun to have you on, Rich. We're going to have you back soon. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dave.
I had to just share that with you all, listeners, because you're hearing some Texas talk today. Y'all get that again? Anyway, I just had to share that with you. It's so much fun to listen to innovation that's going on. And guys, I like that one statement. I'm reading a book right now. If your goal doesn't scare you, it's probably not big enough. And so I'm reading that book, and then I talked to Rich, and very, very exciting. Anyway, I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors. The Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Black Knight, Open Mortgage, Lenders One, and the Mortgage Collaborative, as well as Velma, Knowledge Coop. And finally, I want to say a special thank you to Alice, Andy, Alan, and Joe for being here each and every week. I know this is a little bit different program today, but we're going to be changing things up as we move forward in 2019. Get ready for it. Let's take a break and get over to Rob Van Rapphorst and hear what he has for the MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob?
I'm Rob Van Rapphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. President Trump has announced a deal with congressional leaders to temporarily reopen the government while talks continue on his demand for additional funding. The pact would reopen shuttered government departments for 3 weeks as negotiations on Homeland Security continue. The president said that a congressional conference committee would spend the next 3 weeks working in a bipartisan fashion to come up with a border security package. Also last week, House Financial Services Committee ranking member Patrick McHenry sent a letter to Chairwoman Maxine Waters requesting committee hearings on a dozen different topics. This marked the first public statement of financial services priorities from the GOP in this Congress. Among the priorities were FASB oversight and CECL accounting, cybersecurity readiness, fintech, and GSE reform. And finally, last week, mortgage apps activity cooled as both purchase and refi apps were down. But overall, they do remain at healthy levels. That's it for this week.
Yeah. Good job, Rob. Appreciate that. You know, the part of all the things he just talked about, which one scares me the most? GSE reform. What does that mean? What does that look like? I was talking to Faith Schwartz this past week, had a delightful conversation. What a neat lady. We've got to get her back on the podcast. And she knows Mark Calabria and was talking about some of the things Mark has published. This is a big item, and we're going to be paying close attention to it in this podcast throughout the year. And we've talked about it. Talk about things we are excited about. The digital business card works for others, works for me. Folks, I want you to check it out. I'm not going to spend a lot of time today talking about it, but go to the website. If you want to hand out something like that old paper card you've been carrying, well, that's fine. but you're not going to know where it goes. If you hand out a digital business card, you know where it went, who referred you. It's a powerful tool, and I think it should be a part of your sales strategy. Speaking of sales strategy, go listen to last week's podcast with our good friend Pat Sherlock. A lot of downloads on that one. Very, very impressive. Let's run over to Les Parker for the TM Spotlight and this week's macro view of the markets. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by LoanLogic. Nothing's going to hold bonds back now. Straight ahead and on the track now. They're going to make bulls' dreams come true. Disappointment over almost every economic indicator keeps treasuries on track to rise. A solid dollar and cheap oil fuel the drop in mortgage rates. A U.S.-China trade deal will happen after they find ways to constrain China's abuse of intellectual property laws. Hard, soft, or delayed Brexit will happen too. Inflation will return in a millennia. So in the meantime, there is no stopping bonds. They're going to do it. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
I like it. Good job with the music, Les. Always enjoy that. And we're going to be talking more about Les's music selections in the Hot Topic segment. You'll enjoy that. Joe Farr, good to have you here with us, as you have been for nearly 10 years. Can you believe it's been 10 years, Joe?
That's hard to imagine. It is hard to imagine.
I remember when I tried to talk you into doing it the first time. You go, who wants to listen to a guy from Texas with an accent? Now you got me saying y'all and all y'all. So, I mean, that's what happens. It works, brother. We're going to have half the country, half the mortgage industry will be talking like us pretty soon. Oh, anyway, what's your view on the markets? What's happening?
Well, so far today, MBS prices are up a little bit. Unfortunately, stocks are down, and that's sort of the correlation there. Earnings and concerns about slowing growth in China are apparently hurting stocks today. You know, last week was pretty interesting day. There was not very much movement in mortgage rates last week from start to end. But it was interesting in that every day, MBS prices opened low, either low or high, by a pretty significant event, an amount, you know, where something happened late in the day before or something happened overnight, which caused both stocks and bond prices to react. Largely, by the end of the day, what had happened to begin the day was offset somewhat because, again, each day there wasn't a lot of net movement, just intraday movement. It wasn't caused by economic data. The only data that came out were existing home sales and jobless claims. Existing home sales were weak. Jobless claims, though, to note, were as low as they've been in the last 49 years at less than 200,000 net new claims. So that was pretty interesting. The costs stemmed from things like slowing growth in China and Europe. And then on the positive side for stocks, anyway, the discussion about additional trade talks with China. And then the central bankers were very accommodative. So all of them, Fed Chair Powell, made comments about potentially changing the path of balance sheet reduction. Mario Draghi said they're ready to keep rates where they are, at least through the summer and longer if necessary. Even China's central bank came out with a new financing facility that's going to allow a lot more liquidity in the market there in China and will be stimulative. So all these were good for stocks. Some were good for bonds, too. Some were not good for bonds. It was the source of a lot of market movement. And then looking at this week, Dave, there are two big events to pay attention to. One is the Fed meeting, which will release a statement at 2 o'clock on Wednesday and will be followed by press conference. This is the start of Fed Chair Powell's press conferences after each meeting, not just every other meeting. Then the other thing is the non-farm payrolls that are going to come out on Friday at 8:30 Eastern time. 158,000 net new jobs are expected to be announced. No change is expected in the unemployment rate or the average hourly earnings on a year-over-year basis. Also on Friday, the ISM manufacturing comes out, consumer sentiment comes out. And, you know, even though the government's reopened, there are several reports that are scheduled for release this week, but are likely not to be released, at least not on schedule, probably will be released on a delayed basis. And that's the first look at fourth quarter GDP, which was scheduled for Wednesday. And then core PC inflation, you know, which is a really important report to pay attention to, along with construction spending, were both scheduled to come out on Friday. And it's just hard to know how long it's going to take them to gear back up and get ready to make these announcements. And I guess it's good to pay attention to the fact that they may come out, but if they don't, they will sometime in the not too distant future. So that's it, Dave. I'll leave Les a lot of time to go over his predictions.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward. I record them. I remember some of them, but I kind of, especially in light of interest rates falling right now, especially when the NBA said, no, they're going to stay the same or possibly go up. So, and the NBA wasn't off from what a lot of economists were saying. So it's real interesting. This could be an interesting year for sure. We're going to have a lot to cover. So our second 10 years, Joe, what will these look like? We won't go there. Yeah, we're glad to have 10 years under our belt and just keep plodding ahead. Appreciate you, Joe. Thanks for being here
for
10 wonderful short years.
It's been my pleasure.
Appreciate it. It has been mine as well. Before we get on enough with another podcast veteran here, Alice Alvey, and hear her legislative update, let's get from Scott Gordon his segment on the science of sales. Scott?
How many times have you been asked, what do you do? Too many to count. Most people answer with their job title. I'm a loan originator. Boring. Introducing yourself is an opportunity to communicate with story. Here are three steps to creating your story. 1. Invent a main character for the listener to play a part in the story. 2. Create an easy-to-follow series of events that pose a problem for the main character. And 3. Finish your story with a one-step description of what you do to solve the problem. When someone asks, "What do?" you could reply, imagine that you're a traveler in a foreign land, and what lies between you and your destination is a wilderness of quicksand, thorns, and overgrown trails. People can't brave the wilderness alone. To make it to the other side, you need a guide, and I am that guide. My team has the best track record of getting travelers through the wilderness without getting stuck in quicksand or lost. 3 steps to a simple story to answer one of the most common questions asked. This sounds too good to be true. It's not. It's just the science of sales.
That's good job, Scott. Appreciate it. Someone just texted me and said, I've been employing some of these things that Scott's been giving out there. He says, it actually works. He says, I shored some of them up a bit, but it's really good. Well, Alice, so good to have you here. Appreciate you being here for 10 years. Short years, Alice. It seems like we just started just yesterday. Your son was involved with us so long ago. It was so much fun to have him here. He made a major contribution to us during our growth and trying to figure out how to do it, as you have. Thank you. What you got for us?
You're welcome. Thanks, Dave. I have declared that this week should be Treat Your Government Worker Nice Week. I think we need a national holiday today for them because they are all coming back to 22 business days of piled up work, right?
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of really stressed out people, especially USDA, who are trying to get loans closed. So I thought, oh, my gosh, those folks, you know, they're like, yeah, I'm back to work. Oh, my gosh, I got to go back to work, and there's a pile, right? Anyway, everybody out there, we're all going to be rushing to try and make sure USDA stuff in particular can get done in this 3-week window, assuming we might be right back where we were if the government can't come to an agreement. So, and it's interesting that Les played Laverne and Shirley because we were watching the SAG Awards last night and Penny Marshall had passed away this year. So I was like, oh, a little tribute to Penny Marshall. So,
yes,
I'm old enough to remember watching that show. And as my kids would say, yes, there was color TV when I was a kid. So,
so funny.
So anyway, the quick thing I want to make sure everyone's got their eyes on is this new VA interim rule, which as of now is still effective with applications on February 15th. You should by now have your disclosures designed so that you can pick up the new net tangible benefit. You've got some hard stops in your system to make sure these loans don't close without a true pass or fail. What's really interesting about the way VA wrote the rules, I think they made it more complicated than it really needs to be by talking about type 1s and type 2s. And they keep calling it a type 1 cash out, but then the definition of a type 1 cash out is the borrower's not getting any cash out. So that's kind of funny in my opinion. It's really just a no increase in the borrower's current payoff. So the only cash out would really be an interest per diem. And so that group of loans must follow all the same rules, and then they have a few extra things like the recoupment requirement and the seasoning requirement of 210 days. But generally, for the lion's share of the VA cash out refinances, it's find something on the list of eight and then make sure that your borrower is getting this comprehensive disclosure at the three-day mark and then again at closing so that they're fully informed about the new transaction. So those are the biggest things about the new VA rule, and I hope you're all ready for it for February 15th. We'll certainly keep an eye out if VA may decide that it's going to be an extension, but so far everything we're hearing is no extension. This has to get put in place. So loan officers, hopefully you're ready to talk about this new disclosure with your borrowers. Better get a copy from your company so you know what you need to explain to them. So that's the scoop, Dave. Back to you.
Good job, Alice. If you don't know who Alice Alvey is, what rock have you been living under? She's Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage, here each week with a legislative update, and been doing this for 10 years. And she still looks so young. Amazing. Alice, thank you so much. Appreciate it. You're so good. I love it. We get so much feedback on your segment. Appreciate it. And speaking of good education, if you're looking for a fun and easy fun training technology solution, check out the folks at Knowledge Coop, powered by the Smart Digital Platform.
Hey, Nathan here from the Knowledge Coop. Do you need to teach a course? Have you considered maybe using the Socratic method? See, it's a process of using questions that engage learners to question their assumptions in order to eliminate contradictions. The primary goal is not to have listeners try to answer unanswerable questions, but to get them to develop critical thinking and to keep them engaged in your topic. Have you got some training to do? Check out the Knowledge Coop for fun and easy video-based training for the mortgage professionals out there. And it's all powered by a smart digital platform.
Thanks, Nathan. Appreciate you guys. His boss, founder of the company, Ken Perry, and I are in a mastermind group. And I got to tell you, these guys are smart guys. They got some innovative ideas of how to help you get your message out. Check them out, knowledgegroup.com. Alan Pollack, good to have you on the podcast. As always, we missed you last week, but you're back this
Thank
week
you.
With a tech report. What you got, friend?
Oh, man, all kinds of good stuff. So first, today's the Independent Mortgage Conference. So for those that made it, I didn't go this year. David, I don't know if you're there today.
Nope.
But good luck to all
going to New York.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone's filling up on all that great content, all the networking and all the great stuff that we do when we're out there. So I know the show's been increasing in folks going, so have fun out there. You know, David, this week, or the end of this week, we've got the Super Bowl coming up. Excited to see what commercials are to come. But more importantly, I think everyone looks forward to, you know, what kind of disruptive, innovative commercials. Of course, I'm talking about Rocket Mortgage. Will this year continue with the Keegan-Michael Key theme? It's simple. We'll move to AI. Who knows, right? Maybe we should take some bets. But look forward to seeing what's gonna pop up this weekend. You know, there's a bunch of things in the news. TD Bank just introduced a new digital mortgage lending app. Ex-Fannie Mae CEO Mayopoulos lands at Blend. There's even conversation around fintech charters being able to allow a technology company in lending to actually get a banking charter. And there's lots of pros and cons to it. It's a topic we probably could talk about next week. But you know what I wanted to talk about today, I think it requires time. So, and I think, David, you'll have some feedback, but really it's about cybercrime. And we've talked about this in the past, right? Actually, in the last few podcasts, we talked about how collaborative closing portals will help reduce some of the different cyber crimes that are occurring with borrowers sending the down payment to the wrong place and so forth. Well, you know, this past week, you probably all heard there was 24 million mortgage documents exposed in a large data security breach. That's 24 million records, right? Representing thousands, tens of thousands of loans and mortgages. You heard about that, right?
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, yeah, amazing.
Well, it's avoidable, right? Well, the server, it was an Elasticsearch database. And for those non-technical folks, it just means that it's a database that makes it a lot easier to search on it. It's like think of the word big data and all this content that you can easily find. Well, it had more than a decade's worth of data containing loan and mortgage agreements, repayment schedules, and even financial data and tax documents. It was obviously an intimate insight into a person's financial life. So get this, it wasn't protected with a password. It was just out there in the open, allowing anyone to get to that data and all of those documents. The database was exposed for about 2 weeks. It was found by an independent security researcher, a gentleman named Bob Dysenko, or Dychenko, if I pronounced his name right. The leak was traced back to Ascension, which in our industry, we know them as a data and analytics company. They're in Fort Worth, Texas. And what they do is they take data, they do OCR to those documents. They take all that data, right, and they, of course, then have the documents and the data. Well, a certain amount of those loans were shared with a contractor for analysis. The contractor's name is Optics ML. And what wound up happening is the data, of course, it was mishandled. There was no password set. I guess somebody made a quick assumption. And so then it was shut down. TechCrunch, along with Bob Dychenko, have been doing an investigation on this as much as they could. They've reached out to Optics ML. They didn't get a response. Well, a few days later, Bob went back out there and found out that there was a second exposure, but this time not just the data was exposed, but actually all of the documents. And he did an analysis.
Oh my gosh.
You can actually go, you can go online, and he has screenshots redacted. He's redacted them, of course, of mortgage documents from some of the largest lenders and banks in our industry. It was an Amazon server. It was a public IP address. And by the way, folks, it has nothing to do with Amazon not being secure. There are things that Amazon you can do to stay extremely secure. It was just completely wide open. He even says that the URL was a guessable URL that you could have figured out. He took a sample, and what he found, it was in the file leak. It was just 21 files containing 23,000 pages of documents all stitched together. And everything that you can imagine was in there. He showed examples of W-2s, tax forms, even U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development files. So what does that bring us to, right?
Heartburn. That's what it brings us. Heartburn. Serious heartburn. Oh,
right?
My gosh.
And I guess there may be some heartburn after the winner of the Super Bowl this weekend. But I think in the end, what we're talking about, David, is that it's vendor management. The cost of one or two employees to control and manage how you work with your vendors and how you understand what they're doing, or to put a vendor management practice in place, is so important. It doesn't cost as much as a breach. You don't know. These consumers, which could be, by the way, you and I, because I had a mortgage within that time frame as well. It dates back pre to 2008. Everybody supposedly is going to be contacted. Now, I know what you're all thinking. The reality is what can you do? So if you sue them, right, you're going to sue the lender. You're going to sue the technology vendor. There's going to be all kinds of lawsuits. So as a lender, it is extremely important for us to make sure that we are buttoned up. And we can't go through everything today, but most importantly, you've got to understand, you've got to do not just a yearly or even a one-time review of our vendors, but you have to review them all the time. There are software-related major. Absolutely. Anyways, David, I thought that would be interesting. And the last thing I wanted to end with on a good note is a lot of folks reach out to me looking for mortgage technology jobs. And I know that we don't necessarily have a bank of just mortgage-specific jobs. There's a couple locations. LinkedIn's a great resource. But if you have mortgage technology jobs that you're looking for, feel free to give us a buzz or send an email. My email is alan@tms-advisors.com, or reach out to David Licken, and we'd be more than happy to share the knowledge.
Yeah, we just placed two more executives here this past week. So we're not in a placement firm, but we sure help out people.
That's right.
Man, Alan, thank you so much. I love it. That did give you some heartburn, and certainly given some of our listeners heartburn. And don't think it can't happen to you, folks. I mean, you just got to be diligent on it. Thank you, Alan, so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Another department that's been getting some heartburn, it's called the accounting department, and we've got the profit doctor here. Even my accountant called and said, Dave, did you listen to your own podcast? I said, what? Do you listen to the profit doctor segment? She quoted me. She says, Dave, we're trying to get 1099s out, 1098s out, and you're asking me to do this, this, and this. Listen to your own podcast. Listen to Andy. So, Andy, I'm shutting up and listening as best I can.
Hi, Dave.
Always exciting stuff.
Always exciting stuff happening in the accounting department, for sure, because we control the money. Nothing goes out without us touching it.
That's right.
So, you know, people should really think about that. You want to get paid. You want to get your expense reimbursement done. You better not piss off the AP clerk, I tell you.
So tell you at some point.
You want to open that new branch, you better be nice to the CFO. So, you know, we're celebrating 10 years, and I look back at a couple of the first shows, and what's kind of funny to me about this, or interesting to me about this, is that the path to success is fairly consistent, because the things we were talking about 10 years ago about plan, measure, manage, adapt, measuring loan level revenue and cost to drive loan level profitability, profit by branch, by originator, profit by product, all of those metrics, along with measuring capital, monitoring capital, forecasting the year so we know how much money we're going to need in terms of net worth and cash flow to fund our volume growth. Those were things we were talking about 10 years ago, and we are still talking about it. I think there's probably a good new crop of folks that are here today that weren't necessarily there 10 years ago.
That's right.
The industry has changed a lot. But, you know, the accounting classes at the MBA continue to be well attended. It's still a really interesting topic. People want to do it well. The other thing I wanted to mention about today is as we're in January, we're working on our audit. When we work on our audit, we're getting ready to present the December 31st balance sheet. And it's going to be a financial statement that we prepare that's ours, but our auditors are going to put it in a report and express an opinion about the degree to which the financials are fairly presented in all material respects. And so those words "in all material respects" are important because it defines how much is enough, how good is good enough, what can our balance sheet look like. And the thing that people today are going to be thinking about in the accounting department and working on the audit is the derivative asset. And the derivative asset is simply the fair value, the mark-to-market. Fair value and mark-to-market are the same thing. So fair value is just the market-based presentation of something that you own. And the derivative asset is driven from the interest rate lock commitments. So when we issue a lock commitment to a customer, there's an embedded gain that we expect to make when we close, fund, sell that loan. And so the accounting people actually make you count some of that. And it's based on this mark-to-market standard of calculating what's the fair value of your locked pipeline. And that's where the world kind of comes to an end. That's where the bolts come off the wheels as accountants try to think about, well, what's the right answer? And it's really an interesting debate. There's a couple different strategies, and I'm not going to go into all the details of that. But the simple thing about this is when the accountants are doing their machination to try to come in, what's the fair value of the interest rate lock commitment? Well, think about this. The originator just now talked to a customer, got an interest rate lock commitment issued to a customer. We expect to make 3 points on the back end when we sell it. What's it worth the moment it's locked? Well, is it going to close? Have we incurred any costs? I mean, so there's all these things you got to think about, but what's the fair value? What would someone pay? Someone walks into your office and has a checkbook with $1 billion in it, and they go, I want to buy your locked pipeline. And these locks that you just got today, I want to buy those. How much are they worth? Well, are they going to close? How much are we going to make when we sell it? Is it what's the creditworthiness of the borrower? What's our assessment of the probability of it's going to actually close? So we got to go through all those thinking, that consideration. And what's interesting about the December 31st balance sheet is that we pretty much know which ones we're going to close because they closed. So we ought to be able to get a really good idea. So when the accountants are walking around talking to the auditors and their eyes are rolling back in their head, they're probably debating fair value. And they're debating the fair value of the locked pipeline because mortgage companies have to report the value of the locked pipeline on the balance sheet of the financial statements in the audit that goes to the warehouse line lenders. As nuts as it is to even think about counting the profit in the locked pipeline, you know, are they going to close? When are they going to close? How much are we going to make? But the accountants make us do that, coming back all the way to Enron. So anyway, this is an interesting topic. So fair value is nothing more than mark-to-market is nothing more than what's it worth? What would somebody pay you to have it? What's the current market?
You know, this really opens up a whole bunch of people. People are texting me, I need to have Andy's number. I need to talk to him. So if you want to get a hold of Andy and get more information on all this, it's Andy, A-N-D-Y, at mbs-team.com. Andy, a lot of questions coming in on your segment right at the moment. And so rather than trying to answer them, seeing as we're running a little late, I think just going to encourage some people to get a hold of you. So hopefully you're going to get some new business out of this.
My favorite topic, love to talk about it.
Favorite topic, accounting. You are wonderful that you find that to be a favorite topic. I'm so glad that you're wired like that. Appreciate you, man. Appreciate
you. Well, it's creative because it's the finance side of it. Just real quick, it's the finance side of accounting. It's not just 1 + 1 + 2, is how much is 2 worth?
And well, that's the part. And see, that's what you being a music person, there's so much creativity in you. And a lot of people say creativity and accounting, well, if you look at some financials, I guess we looked at, I think there's a little, they take creativity too far. But the reality is, and there are things you can do, and that's why you need to get someone who's a creative, an artist, a musician, if I will, to look at your financials. That's good. Excellent.
Thanks,
appreciate
Dave.
Appreciate it, Eddie.
Appreciate it.
Love
have
it.
A good
love
show.
It. And as you are here, you too have been here for 10 years. I want to say thank you for being one of the originals. It's been noticed, and now others are coming up. It's fun to see it. We just keep our game going forward and moving it up, move the bar up, and you're always helping with that as well.
Well, and Dave, I think the credit due is to you as well for seeing something that wasn't and realizing that it was. And so that's what I appreciate most about you. Well, there's lots of things I appreciate about you. But that's one of the things that is super, super valuable and important about you is you see what can be before everybody else knows that it is. And that's what happened with Looking on Lending podcast. Because
you know what?
I was like, really? What?
I don't even think. I remember we had that discussion. Like, I don't know. I don't get it, but I'll participate if you want me to. And then now look where it's at. 10 years later, it's crazy. Everyone
well,
knows you.
You.
Now
I trust you. So, yeah, the relationship was like, okay, yeah, sure, fine. But congratulations, Dave. 10 years. Good job.
10 years. Good. Congratulations to us all. By the way, those sound bites, we have to have our marketing people listen to that. That was really good sound bites. We may use that for our marketing. Appreciate you, Andy. Let's take a quick break, run over, listen to our sponsor, Black Knight, and what they have to say.
As housing prices climb, U.S. homeowners are holding more capital equity than ever before. Effectively capturing the equity market could pose a unique challenge for lenders who may be limited by the capabilities of their current loan origination system or consumer lending platform. Lenders looking to streamline their home equity business processes can benefit from Black Knight's LoanSphere Empower loan origination system. Using this robust and intelligent technology, Empower can originate both first mortgages and home equity loans on the same system. This single configurable solution will help lenders improve margins, support regulatory requirements, and enhance customer satisfaction. To learn more about Empower, visit blackknightinc.com today.
Check them out, blackknightinc.com, and appreciate them as a sponsor. Appreciate their leadership in our industry even more. You know, folks, this is one thing I want to make important note. We're making some changes to the podcast. Number one is when you're listening to it live, like you are, many of you are, we're going to just continue on. But for those of you who are listening on a downloaded basis, this podcast is going to end at this point, and then we're going to take the hot topic and separate it out as a separate podcast. Breaks it up a little bit, and for those that are on a tighter schedule, they don't miss out. That was actually a suggestion that Rich Wydell gave us, and I've been hearing that a lot. Love the podcast. Can't always listen to the full thing. So we're going to break it up into segments. So if you're listening to this on a downloaded basis, just continue on. Click the next podcast because you're going to get into the hot topic segment.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.